It's time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello and welcome to episode 50 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Barnes. 50 is kind of a milestone episode, I guess, and I just want to thank all of you for your support and for listening to the show, because getting feedback from you it's one of the main things that really keeps me going. I really enjoy doing the show, but hearing from you and finding out exactly what it is that you enjoy and appreciate just makes it so much better for me. So thank you for allowing me to still be here after 50 episodes. It really, really means the world to me. And thank you so much to those of you who have sent in your audio submissions on SpeakPipe. That's speakpipe.com/EYSpurs. I absolutely love hearing from you guys. So keep those comments and stories and bumpers coming in. Right now, there is a 90-second time limit, but if you guys want to leave me a little bit longer story, just email me at alyssa@earnyourspurs.com, and I'll let you know how you can do that as well. Because like I've been saying, I really want to feature more of the audience on the show, and your submissions are just amazing, and I love getting them. Now, I just want to make one more quick announcement before I introduce you to my guest today, and that is that EarnYourSpurs.com is about to get a new facelift. I've been working with a designer to redesign the website, hopefully make it a little bit more user-friendly for you guys, give it a little bit of a updated look. And the main reason is because I'm adding a new feature to the website. As you know, I'm very passionate about helping you to have those Western experiences that you're looking for, and to improve your skills, and to basically make it easier for you to do the things that you want to do that are related to the Western lifestyle. So the new feature that's coming to earnyourspurs.com is a directory. And this directory is going to feature businesses in your local area that offer the types of services you're looking for. For instance, you might find a rodeo, you might find a riding stable, you might find a dude ranch. There's all kinds of possibilities. And the idea is to feature as many of these businesses as possible across the country so that no matter where you are, you can find what you're looking for. Now, I know that some of you who listen to the podcast may have a business that you're looking to promote online. So this could be a perfect opportunity for you as well. So be looking for the newly redesigned earnyourspurs.com shortly, hopefully within the next week or so. And in the meantime, if you're interested in getting in the directory, you can reach out to me. Just shoot me an email at alyssa@earnyourspurs.com. Now, moving on, I want to introduce you to my guest today. I'm really excited, for those of you who don't already know her, to introduce Heather Smith of BarrelRacingTips.com. Heather is maybe surprisingly the first barrel racer I've had on the show, and I'm really excited to share her knowledge with you guys, because she's an amazing teacher. She has so much knowledge to share, not only with those of you who are barrel racers or aspiring barrel racers, but really anyone will benefit from what she has to say. So without further ado, allow me to introduce you to Heather Smith. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for, you know, setting aside some time to chat with me today. I'm really excited that you could come on the show.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to be here and I'm honored that you invited me, and I'm looking forward to visiting and putting together a conversation that will hopefully be valuable to lots of other folks too. So,
yeah, well, I mean, I love what you're doing with your online channel and putting your videos out there. So I would love to know just more about how you got where you are now. How did you get into horses in the first place and barrel racing specifically, and sort of what's your backstory?
Okay, great. I actually grew up in southeastern North Dakota, and it was really farm country there. And so my parents were teachers. My mom always had a horse and grew up with horses. but never really had transportation for them. And then my parents divorced when I was 5, and we still lived in the country, but I never had like a truck and trailer or anything to actually go and do a whole lot with my horse, which I really wanted to from the beginning. And so I managed to, you know, bum some rides and show a little bit in 4-H and so forth, but didn't buy a truck and trailer of my own until I was in college. And then I was just like off and running. So I went to college. I'm a licensed vet tech. I only stayed in that field for about a year, and I wanted to live in Western North Dakota because I just kind of fell in love with the Badlands and just really loved everything about it, and had a hard time finding a good job. And so the next best place I thought would be Wyoming. And so that's where I was led and was there for a good 8 years. And the weather just began to sort of, I mean, it was a step ahead of North Dakota, but it was just really kind of getting in my way. I've you know, real progress year round with the horses. So eventually an opportunity kind of came up for my husband and I to make the leap to move down to Texas. And so we've been down here for 2 years and we absolutely love it. And it just, the weather, the climate here allows us to do so much more with the horses year round, which is a huge plus. And anyway, so I really admired, I read the little story, you know, like about your dad and how he had to really go out of his way and work hard and always had this passion and dream to be a cowboy. And it wasn't something that he was just like born into.
Right.
It was just a passion he had, but he had to really go out of his way and work hard to get there. And I feel I really relate to that story because I kind of feel like in a lot of ways, I was in a similar situation where I wasn't just born into it, but it was really by choice. So that's kind of my background and story. I just, barrel racing, I've kind of participated in some other things. I've done a little bit of reining. I showed a little bit of English when I was a kid. But barrel racing was always on the forefront. You know, it's just really fast paced and exciting. And I just think it's like an ultimate test of what you've developed. And I really, really get into developing a strong foundation with my horses, mentally, emotionally, physically, in every aspect. And there's just nothing quite that compares to testing what you've developed and seeing, you know, how you're doing other than running barrels at speed. Like, there's just isn't another event I found that really kind of really compares to that. And so, but that's what makes it attractive to me. So I guess I just struggled so much early on, you know, with a lot of things, had some really challenging horses. And then I just worked really, really hard to learn and just wouldn't give up and just kept moving forward. And eventually I come to this point where I just realized, wow, I just realized there was a lot of other people that were struggling with a lot of the things that I had struggled with. You know, not that I had totally arrived, you know, like we ever do, but
right.
I thought, how can I have all this information that could really help people and not share it? And so I had my good horse, had a pretty serious injury in 2012. And so he had a long period of time off. And in 2011, I had started barrelracingtips.com. And I actually had my own web design business for quite a few years. And so that was kind of a nice lead in to what I'm doing now. So anyway, when he was hurt, I just kind of felt called to just start writing my first book, even though I didn't really have a lot of writing experience. I just had a message to share that I knew would help people. So I just dove right in, and it probably took about 6 months total, but I did the majority of, you know, the formatting, the writing, the formatting, the design, you know, cover design and everything myself. So that took about 6 months of pretty focused work. And now I've had 2 other books since then and more coming. So that's kind of a summary of where I started and why I'm passionate about what I do and, you know, how it all came together.
That's awesome. I love it. So you said you worked as a vet tech out of school for a year. And then did you start training horses after that, or what was the transition?
Well, I had always had my own horses that I was always working with, and it never totally, I mean, I've taken and ridden outside horses here and there, but mm-hmm. It never appealed to me to necessarily train full time because I loved horses so much that I like wanted to protect it in a way that like, I never wanted it to be the sole source of income, like competing,
yes.
You know, and I never wanted to get burnt out on it. And sometimes like, I love horses, but there are aspects of the people part that can be discouraging. And so I just wanted to really protect that. But the problem then, my vet tech degree and my licensure there, like I'll always appreciate that. It plays a part in, you know, my everyday life, everything I learned. But I really had to be like married to that career. And it was just a lot of hours. And maybe, you know, it depends on the situation. That's just what the situation was at the time for me. But I transitioned at that point to some just office jobs, you know, that allowed me better pay and actual vacation and flexibility with the hours so I could do more with my horses. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, gradually, I knew I needed more flexibility for it to work. And then that's what led me to gradually starting my own web design business. So yeah, I only stayed in the vet tech field for probably a total of a year because I just knew it was getting in the way of doing what I want, what I really loved with my horses. It just took up such a huge chunk of time with very little flexibility.
Yeah. And I totally understand what you're saying about wanting to protect your love of horses and not wanting to do that full time, because I mean, I feel the same way myself. I grew up with a horse trainer for a dad, and I understand the business side of things. And that's not something I ever wanted to do either full time, you know?
Yeah. And even to this day, I always think to myself, even if like, if you want to be a professional full time, like competitor, and that's main, like your main career, I always say to people, it's ideal to have like more than one stream of income so that, right. you know, for people who are really serious about this, you never want to really put all your eggs, you don't want to spread yourself too thin. That's really easy to do, but putting all your eggs in one basket isn't the best way to go because everything's so volatile and horses get hurt and things change and everything's always different. But yeah, I always wanted to have something that would kind of like help support my horse habit. And the other thing too, is that like, if you feel it puts just a huge amount of pressure on you if you do, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, put all your eggs in one basket, where it's like if you get pushed into this like do or die mentality, and that's not healthy with horses because you end up transferring some of that pressure to them and then things can really fall apart.
Yeah, get into that slump. It's like a life or death situation. You have to win, and then you put so much pressure on yourself that you can't.
Yeah, you just attach, and you know, it's easy to do, to just attach yourself too much to your results. And then things have a way of just slipping out of your hands even more so when we go too far in that direction.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there who maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I get the impression that there's a lot of people who kind of get into barrel racing before they do anything else because it's a little bit more attainable maybe than some other events. You don't have to have cattle. You can sort of start out at the level where you are as far as, you know, going to gymkhanas or some smaller events and just mm-hmm. kind of having some fun with it. So what do you see as beginners getting started in barrel racing?
Yeah, I get quite a few questions, you know, comments on my website with questions about that, with people who, girls who want to get started and they don't really know where to begin. Or they've gotten started and they're already experiencing some frustration. And I think you're exactly right. I think that barrel racing is relatively easy to get started with because you don't need cattle. You don't need like a $3,000 show saddle or something, you know, or, you know, it's relatively easy to get started in. But I think that that's also what ends up getting in people's way because they kind of get ahead of themselves, I guess. And so my recommendation for anyone who wants to get started is to really be honest and think about your long-term goals and how far you might want to take it. And even if you just want to like have fun on a local level, it's always worth your while to just like take things slow and, you know, like barrel racing, like I said, it's really the ultimate test of your foundation. And so the thing is like, it'll always be reflected when you start adding speed, like what sort of elements are missing. And mm-hmm. adding more speed is never the answer to that. So it's always important to just be conscious of those little indicators and to kind of take it slow and not get ahead of yourself or like too wrapped up. A lot of people even just get like so wrapped up in their, how they're clocking and their time and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it can be really exciting, especially when you get started and you might have a young horse coming up and the first time you compete with them, you're only like a second off the winning time, which really isn't bad, right? So then it's easy. So you're really excited and you think, oh yeah, every time I enter, I'll just keep knocking a few tenths off and we're going to just be, you know, cleaning house in no time. And it's really easy to like 2 or 3 years later, you're still clocking a second off. it's easy to just assume that it's just going to like just automatically just keep better and better and better. But there's just so many intricacies and details that go into really going to a higher level and being super, super competitive. And it's not that it's not possible to have a lot of success right off the bat. It certainly is. But I think at the same time, people need to be like just conscious and realistic, you know, like don't expect it to happen overnight and be willing to really put in the time and the dedication to learning and to horse care. Like repetitive, you know, speed events are just so physically hard on horses, and it just requires so much therapy and special care in order for those horses to not suffer some physical damage, whether it's obvious or we see it or not. You know, it's always kind of happening. So these are just all the little things that aren't just really out there and obvious. It looks so simple, you know, mm-hmm. but there's so much that goes into everything behind the scenes that makes it come together in a way that, you know, where you can be competitive and then really have something that lasts.
That is so true. I'm really glad that you said that, because it is. I mean, it looks really simple. You go out there and run around three barrels. How hard can that be? But it's true, when you can't stub your toe when you're going at, you know, a high rate of speed, or else it's going to be very obvious. And you're right about sort of getting out there and having some success and then not advancing the way that you think you should. And that kind of reminded me when you said that, of when you're looking at like horse sale ads online and how, you know, for barrel horses and, oh, we're only a second off, you know, or whatever. And it seems like, oh, well, perfect. You know, we can overcome that in no time, but there's a lot more to it than that.
That last half second can be just like the hardest gap to close. And let me tell you, it's hung up a lot of folks, like even very high level professionals and so forth. So it's getting so much more competitive as we go forward. And so it just makes it all just that more challenging. And I never think, you know, I don't get discouraged by it, but I try to think of as being inspired by it and just let that, you know, remind me and be inspiration to take everything I do always, you know, to the next level.
Well, along the lines of like what you said about when you first start out and you kind of get really obsessed with your time, it's kind of easy to get caught up in the competition and like, oh, I want to win. And maybe overlooking some of those smaller details to actually make that happen. How important is it to kind of set small goals along the way that maybe aren't so tied to your time?
Oh, I think that's really critical. You know, like it looks so simple and it seems like, oh, why shouldn't I be able to just do this and just win, you know? But I think that once you spend enough time doing it, you gain some perspective like, oh, maybe it really isn't as easy, you know, as it looks. And so I think that those little goals are really important. And I think that it's really critical to just keep our mind on, you know, the bigger, broader picture and make sure that we have some real depth to how we're approaching things, you know, like you were saying, to avoid focusing on the superficial layers, you know, of like just how you're clocking. Of course, that's important and that's something we're all shooting for. But I think it's just really too easy to get frustrated and get overwhelmed if we just put too much value on that. Or when it comes to breaking things down into small goals, you can just identify some specific thing you know is an issue and work on that and focus on it only for a period of like 30 days or something, you know, and like just compartmentalize and break things down into bite-sized pieces. So rather than kind of spinning your wheels and not really gaining the traction you need and getting where you want to go, if you can just completely resolve these certain issues, maybe like one at a time, you know, they're all connected, of course. But if we can just go really deeply into a few of these areas and really make real progress, I think that's really a helpful way to go about it.
Yeah, just kind of incremental process and being able to appreciate small victories on the way to your larger goal.
Yeah, and there's always something, like there's been times when I have tipped a barrel and come out of the arena just like ecstatic because it was just a fluke thing. It was just a little oopsie. It wasn't like a chronic issue that me or my horse had. But other than that, they just laid down an amazing run. And mm-hmm. so I'm like, you know, there are moments when I just didn't even care that I tipped a barrel. It's like the run itself was solid and correct, and it was just a really minor issue that just a fluke thing about the barrel tipping. And so, you know, it's one of those deals where in everything we do, we can always choose to see something good or something positive, you know, no matter how bad things may look or how disappointing it may be. You know, there's always some sort of gift and a lesson in every kind of challenge or adversity.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think it's important for somebody who's first getting started to have like a trainer or coach or somebody in their corner that they can sort of rely on to help them just improve?
Right. I think that having a mentor is really critical. Most important, I think, overall, more than anything, is that you just have a general, never-ending commitment to personal development and learning that is just always progressing and moving forward. Just because of the area I grew up in, I mean, I remember having an amazing mentor when I was a kid for a period of years, but I wasn't really in this environment where there were a lot of people around that were really excellent horsemen. And so I've had at times to kind of like go it alone, but there were always ways to find resources. Like before even the internet was a really big deal, so this is probably dating me a bit, but I remember actually going to the library and getting like horsemanship. They had like horse training DVDs. And especially this day and age, it's like, oh my gosh, there's just no limit to the resources that are available now. And so I think that if there is a good trainer and a good coach available, you know, in your area and it makes sense, or if it's like for somebody that, you know, it depends on the timing too. Does it make more sense to dedicate yourself to studying on your own, or does it make more sense to go and work with a local professional? Or there was a period of time too. I'm always, you know, big on clinics, and there was a time for quite a few years when I probably averaged like 3 clinics a year, and usually one would be on horsemanship, one would be on barrel racing, and one would be something related to horse health. And so that's the thing, you know, to ask yourself is that like there are some horsemen out there who are kind of, you know, who do pretty well but are somewhat going through the motions, and if you were to ask when was the last time they really worked with someone to learn, they might not be able to even remember or tell you. And so it's just one of those things, whether you work with a mentor or coach or not, just keep learning and progressing however you can. And the other thing too, I think when it comes to barrel racing, is that it's really important to be selective about who you choose to work with, because there are always going to be people that have achieved a fair amount of success, but it doesn't mean that their techniques or methods are going to necessarily resonate. So it's always good to find somebody that just has an approach that just makes sense and really works with you and that helps you, you know, achieve real forward progress and results also, you know. But at the same time, like I said, it's just good to be just conscious and selective about those professionals that you choose to work with.
Yeah, and I like that you said that because, you know, I think a lot of people sort of feel, depending on where they live, perhaps they might feel like they don't have anybody nearby that can help them or that they want to ride with. And you can kind of teach yourself a lot of things. And I'm a big believer in clinics also, because every time I've been to one, I've left there feeling like I was a little better than when I started. So it's nice to, you know, if you don't have someone that you're working with all the time, to at least be able to check in once in a while and get some feedback.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I think it's easy to get in a rut. It's like really common, especially if you have some little maybe insecurities under the surface, it's really common to get in a rut of always wanting to ride by yourself. And I've kind of been there. So like, I feel like I can say this, but it's kind of like, well, you know, what is it about riding with somebody else that makes you uncomfortable? Sometimes if you just want to ride by yourself, it probably means that maybe you should really actually, it would be best to go outside of your comfort zone and put yourself out there and go ahead and ride, you know, with a mentor. So anyway, that's kind of something to keep in mind.
Yeah, we always have to keep asking ourselves those questions, even when they're somewhat uncomfortable at times. So that kind of brings me to something I think a lot of people struggle with, and not just in barrel racing, but probably in most things that we do in life, where we feel like we're being judged or who am I to go out there and do this against all these girls that have been doing it for years, and I'm just a newbie and I don't know what I'm doing. And I mean, how can we sort of overcome that inner critic that tries to sabotage us a lot of the time?
Well, I'm just so refreshed to even hear you ask that and like say the word inner critic, because I'm like, hello, people need to know that like this inner critic exists, because we all have one and it needs to be like brought front and center so that we can deal with it. You know, the thing about, you know, our inner critic for one is to think about, I mean, I have several things to say, I guess, on this subject, because it's been, you know, my own inner critic was like a really pretty strong force in my life earlier on and come a long ways in that area. But one of the first things to think about is that little sort of negative or judgmental voice in our own head, like probably isn't ever going to like completely leave. Like, if even like the very best NFR barrel racers, I promise you still deal with those sort of thoughts now and then. I mean, so like basically your achievements are getting to, you know, some sort of finish line that, you know, realistically never really ends. Like it's never going to completely go away. But we know that this inner critic can come up and just totally really, really get in the way of our success. So we absolutely need to take some action. And the way I look at it, sometimes I think we can get in this cycle where we're beating ourselves up mentally, and then we beat ourselves up for beating ourselves up. And it's like this cycle where we're just like mentally abusing ourselves, you know, in our head. And so I think the thing to remember is that those little voices didn't just come out of nowhere or occur like overnight. You know, they'd kind of been programmed and implanted in our minds by, you know, various experiences and environments that we've been in over many years. And when we see, like, the first step is just having the awareness that, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. So just kind of stepping back and reflecting on, like, I'm actually having this conversation with myself and it's just not healthy, you know? And so the first step is really like awareness. And the thing to think about is that it all really goes back to like fear, you know, and fear isn't like 100% a bad thing, where it's really what keeps us safe. And so a little bit of that is always good. It helps us just make good choices and be careful and so forth. But, you know, when fear is in the driver's seat and this sort of judgmental, you know, voice, then that's when things go haywire. And we just need to have that, you know, be more so in the back seat. Like, you know, thanks for your input, but no thanks. And it's really important. I think the way I like to think of it is to just thank your inner critic for the information. And just, I like to think of it as like loving her to death. Rather than, it's like, because the answer, you know, when this inner critic is just beating us up mentally, the answer isn't really to keep beating ourselves up for beating ourselves up, like I said, right? So it's like, let's take another approach and just think about accepting and just like loving ourselves instead. Or think about, you know, whatever judgmental thought there is, think about what it is, and then add the word and at the end of that. And so it's like, what else, like what is under the surface? What other layers are there? Like, is there some legitimate fear we have that is related to our actual skill level isn't really where it should be, you know? Mm-hmm. Or do we need to work on, is it our ability to really focus and concentrate in a competitive environment? Do we need to put some time into that? You know, so we have to be honest and like peel back the layers and think about what's really there. It's like when we're thinking about like what other people think of us, I think we need to like think a much bigger and broader, because it's not all about us. And usually, you know, in a lot of cases, when we think that other people, we're like putting ideas into other people's heads that are probably aren't really there to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
But that's not their problem. It's ours. And right. So what I've done in the past, I've done this quite a bit, where the point that I've put ideas in other people's heads to the point that I would like be in tears. Like I actually take what somebody says and twist it and turn it around. But that was my own filter. I realize now, you know, like looking back. And so there's this, I think it's like a African proverb or something that says, if there's no enemy within, the enemies on the outside can't hurt you. And so usually the problem is not really out there, you know? Yeah. And so, but basically to this day, I mean, I have practices and things that I do on a regular basis to just like remind me of the truth, which is that I am worthy and I'm valuable outside of what I do and what I achieve. And a lot of times we get mixed up in like, well, when I achieve this or if I can do this, then I'll be enough. And, you know, there's a difference between like self-esteem and self-confidence, and self-confidence is based on action and what we achieve. And the self-esteem is more about just who we are. And, you know, we're all valuable because of who we are. And that's not dependent upon our actions or anything we do or achieve. And so we're like off the hook, you know, like we're awesome. Like just as we are, like even when we're a beginner, even when we have a terrible run, even, you know, when like something embarrassing happens or, you know, like no, whatever happens, we're valuable and lovable and worthy and everything just because we exist, you know, and for really no other reason. So it's important to remember that. And so, like I said, I have practices and things that I do, you know, like I do at least a half an hour of really uplifting, positive reading every morning. And if I ever, you know, get kind of down or something, like I'll take some sort of action that will help me shift my perspective. And so if we're really struggling in this area, like I've even taken some online courses in the past. I'm just an absolutely avid reader. I've read like so much on the area of personal development because I knew this was a legitimate block for me. And so I've worked really hard to overcome it. And so that's the thing, is that like we don't, when we're in this low spot, it's really hard to take the next step, but we just really have to shift our perspective and start learning how to think and perceive things differently. But yeah, taking actions and just soaking on, treating yourself like you're valuable and taking actions that are in alignment with that, you know, is a big part of it too.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I mean, I think so often we get wrapped up in practicing with our horses and improving our horsemanship and, you know, trying to get better every time we compete. And I think a lot of us just ignore that other piece of, you know, more developing ourselves as humans, not so much just within our craft.
Right, right. And I just knew that it was an obstacle for me, and I knew that I just had to take some action. And I've been a person who's always had a lot of drive, and I've kind of even been going through somewhat of a transition in this last year where I'm not really motivated. I just have, I'm motivated for different reasons than I was before. I was really a pretty extreme workaholic, but I was carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders, where I felt like if I didn't just like work my tail off, then everything was just going to fall apart. And that like it just felt like it was all up to me. And that's just an incredibly stressful way to live. And it's exhausting, and you can't keep that up forever. And so it's like, I've just been making some changes. And I think that also it goes back to what was really a huge game changer for me. I read a book in 2005 called Do You Think I'm Beautiful by Angela Thomas. And that totally turned things around, because it really, for the first time, I like fully understood, you know, like how much God loves us and that doesn't change and it's unconditional. And I guess I'd never really even experienced that in my life from humans or anything. But Joyce Meyer has a quote that says, it's not about self-confidence, it's about God confidence. And when we can just like trust in his love for us and that our value in his eyes, then like, we can think about and apply that and how we feel about ourselves and how we present ourselves to the world. And wow, it can just really change everything.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what can happen when you have a shift in perception like that. Now, are there any other practices that you do other than reading? Do you meditate? Do you do anything else that sort of helps you keep your mind clear?
Meditation can be helpful. I don't do it so much anymore. There's been periods where I have in the past, but you know, the morning reading is a really big thing for me. Like how you start your day and end your day is really important. So that's really kind of the really big thing for me. And this is like really individual. Like one of the things I've done is I took a bunch of my most like little inspirational like quotes and messages, probably like 20 or so of like my absolute favorite, the kind of things where like let's say you go out there and to a competition and like you're just sort of triggered by something and you just start, you know, you're having one of those like almost in tears in the tack room moments that I think we've all experienced at one time or another. And mm-hmm. I thought, you know what? I need to have these truths, like these reminders, and I need to have them quickly and easily accessible so that like no matter where I am, I can just like remind myself of these things. So I just uploaded, you know, these little images onto my phone, and but they're there anytime I need them. And so I think it's important to have that sort of structure to support us. So it's like, well, it's like whatever sort of like, I used to think that, well, if I was just strong enough, I wouldn't need all these little systems and, you know, practices and structure and stuff. And I don't necessarily think that's true anymore. Like, I think that because the world, because we're constantly putting ourselves out there, because a lot of what we experience and what's coming at us in the world constantly is fairly negative, I think that we do need to take consistent effort. And the mm-hmm. specific steps that we take are kind of individual, you know, based on each person and are going to vary a little bit. Like listening to certain uplifting music can be part of it, or like journaling or something, you know. There's lots of different things. It just kind of depends on the individual and what works for each person.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I've gone through different periods of my life where I'm really good at, you know, my morning ritual and all that. And I do definitely have a nightly ritual, and I like to go for walks and, you know, read before I go to sleep. And I know that when I get out of my routine, I feel out of control. And I just, there's certain things that cause my mental health to suffer. And that is one of them. The other would be not enough exercise and eating poorly. But, you know, I've learned those things about myself over the years.
Yeah. And that's so smart. And those are both huge ones for me. Like, the eating really clean has become something that like is an absolute requirement, or yeah, like I will kind of like fall apart. And the thing that's hard about that is that you don't realize like how really good you feel and why you feel really good until you're like kind of fall off the wagon a little bit. And then after a couple of days, you're like, oh my gosh, I feel terrible. But yeah, the exercise and the eating right is just an absolute must for functioning and needing to be, have the mental clarity and the energy that I need to do what I do on a regular basis. Like that's a huge part of it. But I'm somebody who also like loves walks and stuff. And being mm-hmm. that I have a history of being such a workaholic, then I try to really stay in check, you know, with like just taking time for me to relax and so forth. And I try to just really limit taking in things that are either negative or neutral. Like I don't watch any news. We don't even have cable here at the house. I actually just made a change because our internet is so terrible here. The videos on Facebook just don't even play like at all anymore for right now anyway. And to save a little bit on that. But I thought this is actually not a bad thing because it keeps me from kind of like getting distracted. And it just lets me go and focus on more like high return sort of activities. And even when it comes to choosing those things that we do to like get refreshed and renewed and rested and replenished, you know, we can choose some that are going to be like give us more value, which would be and refresh us even more, which would be like going for walks or, you know, whatever versus like TV time or something like that.
Right.
But yeah, all those things, that's a huge, huge part of it because like, it's just unreal. I've really studied nutrition a lot, for my horses and for myself. And man, that's a huge part of the mental game. It can really change things when you make adjustments in that area. And it's all about like, there's that saying that says, love yourself enough to live a healthy lifestyle. And it's not about denying yourself anything. You're just giving yourself this greatest gift, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing how much those things can impact us for sure. So for someone who's just getting started with barrel racing, like there can be a lot of information out there and a lot of messages and a lot of people that like to give unsolicited advice. How do you sort of sort through all that and figure out like who to listen to, who is supportive and who maybe doesn't have your best interest in mind, or maybe, you know, a lot of times people just do things differently. So sometimes getting a whole bunch of information can be confusing. What's the best way to kind of sort through all that?
I think you're right there that it is challenging, especially for somebody just getting started, because there is information. Like, everybody in society these days is really like victims of like information overload. It's just mm-hmm. coming at us from every direction. And as horse people, we're already like, we have a lot on our plate. I always like get really honest with myself about the fact that most of us have like what really equals about 6 full-time jobs, you know, if we were to really like,
yeah,
think about it. So, oh my gosh, it can be like another one just sorting out and seeking out, you know, good sources of information. So I think when it comes to determining, you know, what's worth listening to and what isn't, I think that it's a good thing to do is to just kind of like just check in with your intuition, number one, and be like, is this like honoring of my horse and so forth, you know, because the truth be told, there are going to be people out there that do have credentials or have achieved some sort of results, but it's not always a guarantee that the way they've gone about doing it is necessarily going to resonate with you. And right. just because something, a certain technique or something is like widely accepted in that certain discipline or whatever also doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best way to do things or that there's not some sort of drawbacks that come along with it, you know? And so it is a big responsibility to sort out all of that information. But I think that you can't really go wrong. Like, there are definitely some really good, you know, like solid horsemanship programs out there that actually have like step-by-step things that can lead you through these processes so that like you can have some clarity. You know, we have to really kind of trust our gut and our intuition and think about not just, you know, when it comes to receiving advice from someone, you know, it's like, yeah, look at, you know, maybe what they've achieved, but also pay close attention to how they've done it, you know, and are their horses happy? And, you know, it's, there's a lot of people who have offer a lot of value and can really have a lot to share that might not yet have like huge, you know, credentials too. So it's good to keep an open mind when it comes to that. And I think when it comes to like unsolicited advice, as far as the Facebook and Instagram trainers out there, I just like don't spend a lot of time hanging out in places where there are these discussions where there's like a lot of critical things going on. Every once in a while, I've got to kind of keep it in check on my own page, you know, but that's right. kind of rare because I've just set this intention, you know, where it's like, this is positive and uplifting and everything. So when it comes to like criticism or something and somebody says something, when it comes to that, I always think that we should take it seriously, but not personally. And the thing to always remember when somebody is coming out with like inappropriate or uncalled for or unasked for sort of advice is that a lot of times those are people who are just like kind of desperately looking to like feel important or look important or something mm-hmm. or be positioned as an expert. And usually those people make it kind of pretty obvious in a lot of cases that they're not quite there. And it's just kind of an attempt to feel sort of special in sort of a sense. So when it comes to like unsolicited things, that's the thing to keep in mind. And again, it's like, there's in every sort of little bit of advice or criticism or anything that comes at us, there's usually some sort of at least little small nugget of truth we can maybe sometimes just see and take into consideration. And some mm-hmm. of it we're just going to like let us roll off our back and not even apply it or consider it or value it at all. But at the same time, the thing to keep in mind too is that some people have an eye for seeing things that like we might be totally oblivious to, you know, so it's not really necessarily something to ignore either. But mm-hmm. again, if there's a lot of criticism or negativity as far as, you know, what to listen to or something, like I don't really even go there and spend time in those environments where there's comments that are like that, you know. But again, when it comes to like getting professional help and so forth, it's like, just look at the bigger picture and then just really kind of trust your gut, because there's going to be things that are going to contradict each other and that are yeah. going to kind of leave you scratching your head a little bit. And then don't rule out the option of just looking to like really some of the really popular tried and true, like horsemanship, you know, self-study kind of programs that are out there that actually have things set up for you, like already, like step by step, because there's a lot of value in making sure you're going through things in a specific order, you know. And when you're just getting like a hodgepodge from like every different direction and you're trying a million different things, it's really easy to get kind of distracted and just spread too thin.
Right.
So it's maybe better to focus or really focus in on just a handful of people that you trust and so forth, you know, rather than trying to solicit rather than accepting unsolicited advice, you know, or trying to solicit some from like every single direction and have it not really be the caliber of the value that you really want.
Yeah. It's easy to have that. Like what is that movie that where, the dog is always looking around the Disney move, squirrel, squirrel, squirrel.
Like,
you know, every shiny object you have to look at and take into consideration. Oh, maybe I should try this. Maybe this will fix my problems, you know, instead of really focusing and honing in on, you know, just taking it step by step and being patient.
Oh yeah. And think about the barrel racing industry as a whole. Like there are a lot of businesses, you know, companies that are built off of the barrel racers' tendency to jump at like shiny objects or like the next piece of equipment or supplement or whatever.
Right.
And like
bits.
The truth is that the really good stuff is fairly basic. Like I do a lot of research and a lot of homework and want the very best for my horses. And I keep up on the latest things, you know, that are out there. But, you know, if we're constantly like running around for like, we have to be really careful that we're not spinning our wheels and looking for like quick superficial fixes, you know, where usually
right.
It's like, we just need to go back to the source. We just need to go back and learn something and apply it consistently and just take the time. And, or even like when it comes to horse health, it's like when we have this like foundation of health, the body actually wants to just like, is set up to like heal and maintain itself even better. Like we don't necessarily have to like add all this extra stuff to try to keep our horses functioning at a reasonable level. But when we can look at it from a foundational level and just set them up to just sort of thrive naturally, then man, we're just like so ahead of the game, really.
Like how much should a beginning barrel racer focus on horsemanship versus barrel racing specifically? I mean, for me, I would think that you don't need to run the pattern that much. You need to focus more on your horsemanship, but I'm just curious what your take is on it.
Right. Well, I think you're definitely right in that sense. And it's really easy when you're a beginner to really focus too much on the end product. And I always, there's a couple of things I really love. And that is horsemanship before sportsmanship. That's a big one. I think it's important to be, you know, kind of cruising through and testing ourselves and so forth. But we have to have the awareness. So like if we're feeling something that's not quite right, it's like, okay, I need to go back and work on this away from the pattern. And a majority of the things that are coming up and happening on the pattern are absolutely happening everywhere else. And every, you know, like a lot of horses that are shouldering into the barrel don't have the ability to lope a proper balanced circle or even trot one, you know. And so like if a horse that's going by the barrel, like maybe they're not really connected to your body language whatsoever off the pattern. And a lot of times I'll get people, you know, that come to me and say, well, this doesn't happen. My horse is just perfect in every other aspect. And it's like, well, in reality, usually if you just go under the surface and dig a little deeper, it really is occurring. It's just at a lesser obvious level. And so that just means that our awareness needs to be greater. And that we need to be quicker, you know, with our timing to address all of these little things in every single thing that we do. You know, like every quality that we want to have on the pattern is a quality we have to develop and take very seriously in every single thing we do with our horses, from the way we halter them to the way we lead them from point A to point B in every single thing we do. Like, I've spent a lot of time building confidence in my horse's feet, I might do things that would seem completely unrelated to the pattern. But let me tell you, for a prey animal to allow you to position their feet like really precisely and guide them like with just hair trigger, you know, split second precision. Like they have to be so confident in how they can handle themselves, but they need to be able to trust that like in a split second that it's like, will you allow me to guide you if you need a little help here, you know? And so there's just so much more to it than what meets the eye. But at the same time, like my horses, I don't know, like I'm so into just like personal, never ending learning and personal development for myself and my horses that I don't know if I could ever consider one of my horses finished, because I'm always like, if they're not winning like everything that I enter, then, you know, there's work to be done.
Right.
And so I'm usually, even on finished horses, I'm usually, or, you know, as finished as I would consider them, I'm usually still dinking around on the pattern here and there, you know, because like, there's always something that can be sharpened up somewhere. But I would say that to keep the trips around the actual pattern, like fairly minimal, and some horses are really calmed by repetition, and some horses just really kind of just check out mentally, or they're not just super inspired by a lot of it. And you have to really change things up and keep things interesting. So it really depends on the individual. But most importantly, of course, you want to avoid, which was what I did as a kid, and I think, I don't know, kids make this mistake a lot, but they do think something at speed, like, over and over again, which, of course, is, like, a huge no-no, because it's, you know, a big recipe for a lot of anxiety in our horses and so forth, among other things. But, yeah, the actual stuff that happens on the barrel should be, like, the smallest percentage of time on the pattern should be, like, the smallest percentage of time that you spend, and it should really be the easiest, too. Because if you've done your homework and done it prepared and given your horse everything he needs outside of the pattern, then the barrels will come together really easy. And if they're not coming together easy, then you have work to do away from the pattern. And so that's kind of my take on that. And that's really how we like keep the barrel pattern itself like fun and interesting. You know, and here and there, of course, you know, you may have an issue, like some sort of habit, you know, that's not real positive that horse has learned and how he uses himself on the pattern. And we may have to redevelop and reteach some new habits, gradually starting slow and then adding speed and testing ourselves. And we may have to reiterate that at speed, you know, but like I said, the majority of the stuff that we do, we have to give them the benefit of the doubt and prepare them and educate them so they're confident and they completely understand what it is we're asking. And a lot of that happens, you know, like I said, away from the pattern without a lot of speed. But putting them on the pattern is just kind of like patterning a horse probably takes about 30 days and that's it, to teach them the actual pattern in a way that they really, really learn it. And that's a whole nother thing that I could talk another hour about, is really setting a horse's mind and teaching them responsibility, because it is possible to take a horse around the barrels a million times and never really have them learn it like for themselves, deep from their mind to their feet too. So that's, you know, something to just be aware of. But yeah, it's a small percentage. And I think if something isn't really going well on the pattern, then we have to look to the same problem and how it's occurring in other areas and go back and fix it there.
Yeah. And like you said, when people think that things are going well everywhere else, sometimes you just get so used to it, you don't even notice it anymore.
Right, right. Or it's just having that really keen awareness for reading things and realizing how two things are connected and related to each other and so forth, you know? So like I said, when it's done properly, that everything can come together on the barrels, like really effortlessly, if you've done all your homework. And if things are hard or challenging somewhere, then you just have to like dig deeper, you know, as far as troubleshooting in order to resolve those things. And of course, it's way easier to set yourself up solid, you know, for success from the beginning than it is to go back and fix things. Like, I always say that a lot of people don't really realize how much possibility there is and hope there is to completely turn around, you know, troubled horses or to fix problems. But it's always easier to avoid creating them to begin with.
That's why so many barrel racers love to buy like rain cow horses and stuff, because they've kind of have that really solid foundation on them, and it's easy to teach them something after that.
Because cow horses have this innate kind of catty quickness and athleticism that is really valuable on the barrels as well. So I can see why they're definitely appealing for multiple reasons. It's like once you break a glass, like you can glue it back together, but there's always going to be some, it's never really going to kind of quite be the same. And so, like, I guess, you know, and we all make mistakes. I mean, it happens to everybody, but we've just absolutely got to learn from them and then just vow to like keep progressing and doing better and not keep making the same ones. You know, right. Then it becomes, I think the word is then it becomes a choice after, you know, we've made it like repeatedly. Yeah. You know, so.
And if things are going bad, don't be afraid to ask for help too, because sometimes we just can't see, we're too close to it to see what's really going on.
Oh yeah, and that's really easy to happen too, or we just don't have the eyes. Like, I remember years ago going to an Ed Wright clinic, and there was a barrel race that weekend, so I went and made a run like that night, and I had a really nice run, and I was really excited to show him the video, and I'm like, hey, check this out. And he's like, oh yeah, it didn't look like your horse really rated there at all. And I mean, like, my horse turned and it was a decent run, but he's like, no, it didn't rate. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, really? And so it was really interesting because I'm like, oh, well, I was kind of scratching my head like, oh yeah, that was an example of something that, like, I can see that now if I was to look back on it. But where I was at that time, like, I didn't see it, you know? So I think it's important to realize that the success that we want, you know, is really like possible for anyone, but we have to keep the big picture in mind and like take responsibility for our horse's development versus pointing the finger or thinking it's all about them. Every horse has so much untapped potential, and it's really all about our ability to develop it and bring it out. And even though there are limitations, of course, in certain horses, you know, athleticism and so forth, it's like, why wouldn't we want to just learn everything we can to bring out the absolute best in every horse we throw a leg over? And then it's like, if I ever decide that this isn't the horse to help me reach my goals, at least I can say, I gave this horse everything I can and everything I could and brought out the best in him. You know, because sometimes, I mean, there is a something like, to be said for finding, you know, that perfect fit in a horse. But at the same time, it's like, that's really for me, like what becoming a horseman is about, is being able to adjust and see and read animals and be able to bring out the best and in any combination of innate, you know, characteristics and skill level, you know, that they come to us with and so forth. So, and I guess the other thing I was going to mention too is that whenever things aren't going well and we aren't frustrated, that's never an indicator like of our worth. So like I was saying earlier about taking criticism or something, a run goes downhill or something, to take it seriously but not personally. Like one of the first big barrel races I went to down here in Texas, there was like, I've seen these NFR barrel races before just have a horse run off and make like a queen lap around the arena. And I'm like, oh, so these really high, you know, people who have achieved a lot can still have stuff like this happen once in a while, you know? And so, of course, yeah, we never want that to happen, but it's like, well, you know, nobody's perfect all the time. And I kind of like, it gave me a little bit of permission to like let go of that unhealthy pursuit of looking and perfect and doing perfect all the time. And when things aren't coming together, it's just a temporary indicator. It's just important to be really open to the things that, like, we might feel pretty good about where we're at and pretty confident, but there could be things that we're just still, like, totally missing. And so it's just to be selective about, you know, who we go to for assistance, but still keep, like, a really open mind at the same time. And then in the process, you know, to not be like delusional about what it really takes if you have really, really high goals. Like, there's this book, I think it's called The Outliers, and it has this 10,000 hours to mastery concept, which means that, like, if you break it down, if you spent, which, you know, the basic is premise of it is that it takes 10,000 hours to reach mastery at any specific thing, you know, you want to get really good at. So if you break that down and let's say you spend 2 hours a day, 5 days a week on your horses and your training and everything, which for a lot of people is actually pretty good. If you're getting 2 hours in the evening, yeah, 5 days a week, and you do that every, you know, every week, you're doing awesome. For a lot of people, it would still, yeah, to reach the 10,000 hours, it would still take 20 years. So, wow. So that's the thing to like keep in mind. It's not that success can't happen like really quickly and easily, but at the same time, to, you know, be realistic and to just enjoy the process. And that I really feel like it's possible, you know, that barrel racing, high level barrel racing success is really possible for anyone who really wants it. And, you know, we all have handicaps, you know, certain things that get in our way, whether regardless of what it might appear to be, you know, on the outside. But I think, you know, like I said, it's important, like we were talking about, to just be selective, to just never stop that process of never ending sort of curiosity for constantly learning, or get like complacent with where you're at or spinning your wheels, where if something's not working, just go back to the drawing board. And there's really never any failure. It's just feedback. So I think of it as like, if something doesn't go well in a run, it's just a temporary indicator of that day. It's not an indicator of our worth or our ability or even our horse's ability. It's like if our car runs out of gas, it doesn't mean that the car is worthless. It's just a temporary indicator that it needs to be filled up, right? So right. Again, it's like we just, if something isn't going quite well, we're just like, oh, how interesting. And then we go back and do the homework and get right to work on whatever needs to happen to fix that. And it could be, you know, in a variety of areas, but we just have to keep the big picture in mind and take responsibility, you know, and be patient and enjoy the process. And if you don't really like love the process and fall in love with the process of developing girl horses, like if the just running and competing and winning is like the only thing you're interested in, then it's a person's career will be pretty unfulfilling and short-lived, because there's just so much that goes in behind the scenes. And it has to really be stemmed from, you know, like this foundational love of horses. And I think that that's always something really special to return to, is like why we do it. And that really helps keep, yeah, things in perspective and keeps us from going down that road where we put that unhealthy pressure on ourselves and so forth. And, you know, but being, again, because we love horses, and that's why we work really hard and take responsibility and do our best for them, so that we can have these high caliber, amazing, athletic, high performing horses without the compromise, you know, and that we can really have like the whole picture and do it in a way that's balanced and healthy and, you know, positive for them and for us and fulfilling for everyone. So
That's a good note to kind of start to wrap up on, because I think, you know, if we get in a rut or we get to where we're kind of beating ourselves up because we're not performing the way we think we should be, that's the place to always go back to and remind yourself like why you're doing this. And if it's not fun and if that doesn't resonate with you anymore, then you probably shouldn't be doing it.
Right. And sometimes it's just like a temporarily, like we just need to like step back, you know, and like regain our
right
perspective and take a break. And that goes back to avoiding going too far with any like certain extremes, and just like keeping some balance in life in general. And I think that's, I know I have not quite mastered it yet, but I am getting closer all the time. And so, you know how it is when you really push hard in one area and then some other area gets kind of neglected and you're like, no, I'm not having this anymore. And then, you know, things get a little off kilter. But I think, and that goes back, yes, to not being like out of touch with the time commitment it really takes. Like we really have a quality over quantity theme here, where we just have 3 horses. And for right now, for my husband and I, that's more than enough for us. They're all middle-aged horses right now. They happen to each need some, you know, special maintenance and TLC, or probably, you know, just as much as a young horse we would be supporting that we were bringing up anyway. But it's all about, like, I love going at it with that approach and really, like I said, having, focusing on doing everything with quality, you know, so.
Well, this has been really awesome. I'm so glad that we could do this. And And before I ask you my final question and we wrap up the interview, I just want to share with the audience, you know, how they can find out more about you and, you know, what's the best way to go about looking up online and checking out what you have to offer.
Sure. Well, my website is barrelracingtips.com and my Facebook page is Heather Smith's Barrel Racing Tips. I'm also now on, I've been on Instagram for a while and my name there is Barrel Racer Tips, and I have 3 number one Amazon best-selling books that are available through on my website and on Amazon, and there's going to be more to come. I'm planning on a new book to be released this spring, and then I have a lot of other plans for the future as far as clinics and DVDs and, you know, all kinds of things. But again, when it comes back to that whole life balance thing, I really need to really be focusing on my own horses also. And so that's going to be something that's going to be like really front and center. And so before I jump into doing a whole lot of new things, it makes more sense for me to focus on what I'm already doing well and making sure that my horses are getting the time that they need. Because that's just really another, by actually being out there and competing and being an example, that's just another way for me to help reach people and so forth. And it's what I love doing. It's why, I mean, I love helping people, but the competing and being out there and taking that to the highest level I can is what I really, really love. So,
yeah, I definitely struggle with that balance with my horses versus working and doing the podcast and the blog and all that too. So I totally understand that.
Yeah, I think we have to be realistic, and I'm just getting better and better about like cutting a lot of things out and simplifying like to a very extreme degree in order to be, you know, realistic about what there is room to fit, you know, in our lives.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, like I said, this has been just awesome for me, and I'm so glad that we could connect. And you know, I always wrap up the show with the same question, which is, what do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have? And I'm going to rephrase that a little bit today for the topic we're discussing. And that is, what is the most important quality for any good barrel racer to have?
Well, I think whether it's a cowboy or cowgirl or barrel racer, I think it comes down to developing our ability to read an animal. So it's all about this sort of like nonverbal communication that can kind of seem like it comes innately to a lot of us, but it's all about really being in the moment and having empathy for an animal and thinking about like how they feel about communicating and being involved and doing what we ask them to do, because we have so much power to influence them and help them really learn to like and love what they do. And, but if we can sense and read that's not happening, you know, then we need to be able to, and be willing to take action. So I think that goes along with just having a level of like honesty and integrity and courage for looking at the truth and just living, you know, integrity is like doing the right thing when nobody's looking. And I think that all this kind of ties in and goes back to, I don't know if you were to research the cowboy code or anything like that, I think this would be part of it. But and I always encourage people to just like go to live with depth. Like our success in life is only going to go, and our barrel racing is only going to go as high as our foundation is deep. And our foundation, that's our emotional, you know, mental foundation, our horse's educational foundation. But it's really tempting in today's world to very superficially spin our wheels and just skim over the surface and live kind of shallowly and superficially. But I just always really encourage people to look at what's underneath the surface. And a lot of times that's where you'll really find, and with that courage for honesty and looking, like, that's where you'll find solutions to problems. That's where you'll find truth that just resonates and aligns with what your priorities are and what's important to you. And, you know, like there's just so much there to discover when we're just willing to go that deep. And that might mean a willingness to live and do things a little bit differently than some do. Mm-hmm. But I just encourage people to have the strength to go that route.
Yeah. That's a very good note to end on. That's great advice for anybody doing anything, really. So thank you for that.
Well, thanks. I'm happy to share. This has been really fun.
Yeah, it has. And I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today. And I think the audience is really going to enjoy this. So thank you so much.
Good. Yes, I'll definitely be sharing it with my following. I look forward to that. And doing some sort of podcast has been on the back of my mind for a while. And so I'm really pleased and happy to connect with you and do this and bring it to the world. So I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Heather Smith. I know I really enjoyed chatting with her, as if you couldn't tell. And I really urge you to take advantage of her site, barrelracingtips.com. She's got a lot of free information on there to check out. And I know it would be very, very beneficial for those of you who are barrel racers or aspiring barrel racers. One final reminder to remember to send me your audio submissions to speakpipe.com/EY Spurs so that I can play them on the show. Be on the lookout for the newly redesigned earnyourspurs.com with directory. And one final thing, if you enjoy listening to the podcast, I would so appreciate it if you would take a moment to leave a review in iTunes for me. It only takes a minute and it's really, really valuable for the show in order to be ranked higher in iTunes so that more people can find it. Hey, thank you guys so much for listening in today. I really, really appreciate you so much. And I will see you on the next episode of the Earn Your Spurs podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.